Let's do this. The Cult of Hockey podcast by the faithful and for the faithful. I'm David Staples of the Edmonton Journal, and I'm here today with my friend, Bruce McCurdy. Hey, Bruce.
Hey, David. How are you doing?
Good. That was, I thought, a kind of a thrilling game. Of course, it would have been a bitterly disappointing game if the Oilers had lost, especially after that close call in overtime when McDavid may well have scored a goal. It was just almost too close to call, like, honestly. But it would have been really bitter if they had lost after that. But, man, they managed to win. They outchanced, in terms of grade A chances, 11-6 in that game, Bruce. So they really deserve that victory, and great to see it happen. We're going to do our good thing, two good things, two bad things, and two numbers podcast. And I guess I'm supposed to start it off with my good thing. And my good thing, Bruce, is the Whipping Boys. There's been a lot of Oilers players, including Koskinen, for his contract mainly, but who have been Whipping Boys this year, and I've been doing some of the whipping. That includes Kyle Brodziak, Zach Cassian, Milan Lucic, and Drake Kajula, who I really hated against LA for his lack of effort. But those three players, I thought, all came up big tonight and played really strong games. Cassian might have had his best game of the year. It would have been really fitting for him to score a goal in this game because he was flying all over the ice. They didn't create a lot of, in terms of really grade A chances, that line, but they didn't get scored on. And those are guys who are getting scored on regularly to start the year. And I think they all have plus minus numbers that reflect that ugliness. But tonight Hitchcock has figured it out. And this is what a good coach does, I think. And Hitchcock hasn't done this up and down the lineup, but a good coach will take the team that he has and figure out, how can I get the most out of this particular group of players? You know, with all of their limitations, what can I do to get the most out of them? And often it comes down to simplifying, which is what he's done with the identity line, yep, which I use without sarcasm or an eye roll calling it the identity line tonight. Just dump it in and puck protect in the corners. Real simple, and hustle back when you have to get it out. And they did that really well. So, and Kajula was hitting. He's got a hit. If Kajula isn't hitting, he's such a useless hockey player. Like, I still have a bad taste in my mouth from that turnover that led to the goal in LA, where he was just floating around fishing around for the puck with his stick. But he played very well tonight. So that's my good thing, is the play of those four guys. What's yours?
Well, my good thing is the play of Mikko Koskinen between the pipes, and particularly the one gigantic moment, which I'm not sure if it's even a lot of hyperbole at this moment. It looks like a season-saving save. If Dallas scores on that play with like 1 second to go in regulation of a 0-0 tie after a horrible defensive breakdown, the loss would have been devastating. You talk about how it would have sucked to lose after the McDavid no goal in overtime. Imagine how much it would have sucked to lose without getting to overtime, getting 0 points for that effort because of a blunder at literally the death, as they call it in soccer. Jamie Benn, I mean, there's a former Art Ross Trophy winner, eyeball to eyeball, puck on a stick against your moving goaltender, right from the low slot. And Koskinen came up well. He is big, and he came up big and made a gigantic save there, the biggest of his 28 stops. But you got to look at the whole stat sheet and say, well, 28 shots, and none of them went in. So pretty solid effort all the way through from the gargantuan Finn tonight.
Yeah, Chief was big as a damn mountain tonight, man. He was just Koskinen. He just looks so big and confident in the net right now. Yep. And he's looked that way all year long. Every time he's in net, I have just had this feeling like, man, we have a chance to win this game. This guy can make a save. And the other team, he's got him a little bit spooked. I contend that he does, that he's so big in net, that, and he's got a good glove hand and good pads. He's just doing everything right, that he's got that other team a little bit spooked, and they choke up on their shots a little bit. But Bruce, let's go to your bad thing, because there's a segue here. Right, yeah. Out of this, how the hell did that happen? There's 2 seconds left.
Friggin' play is my bad thing, and I was having a heart attack, and I started having it at center ice when the Oilers broke out, and I think it was the Nuge sent a pass across to Jesse Puljujärvi. It was right on his tape. All he had to do was deflect it into the zone, and regulation was over.
It wasn't on his tape,
somehow,
Bruce.
It went right under his stick.
Nuge should have carried that across the center red line himself.
I know Puljujärvi is everybody's favorite, but he blew it on that play.
They both
did. He's going to, you know, that's the sort of thing where the coach is going to go, geez, can I trust this guy out there in the last minute? Because it was a very routine play, and he completely whiffed the puck. And because of that, Dallas came back on the counterattack with about 10 seconds left. Now, that said, it should have been an undangerous play, but Radulov went wide, and he took Larson wide. And for whatever reason, Klefbom and Nugent Hopkins stood around on the side watching the play while Ben and Sagan got all alone over in front of the net and on the other side. And only the grace of the hockey gourds and the gigantic Finnish netminder bailed them out, because, man, that would have been – that would, I would have lost another clipboard, man.
So, Bruce, the play we're disagreeing on, Nugent Hopkins has the puck. All he has to do is take two more strides, and he's over center ice, and he can dump it. And he doesn't have to make a cross-ice pass in the neutral zone.
But he made the pass. It was right there.
But, Bruce, Puljujärvi puts it on a stick. Bang, he shoots it right back to him. Like, if you watch, like, you're right. Puljujärvi probably should have made that play. He probably should have had a stick on the ice. But he passes it, and bang, Nuge puts it right back. You know, you don't have to make that pass. Keep it simple, man. Get it over center ice and dump it in. And that's my complaint with Nugent Hopkins. And then to make matters worse, what is he doing? What are he and Klefbom doing in this? It's just classic. Like, there's a guy on Radulov. He is not going to score from the corner. I can guarantee you that.
Yeah.
Like, what? These are two veteran NHL players, Bruce. They are protecting a lead. They're not a lead. They're protecting a 1 point.
Yeah,
a point to get to overtime, and all they have to do is make sure nothing bad happens. And what were they doing? I mean, yeah, be mad at Puljujärvi on that play.
Well,
sure.
I'm mad at several players, but he's one of them.
He's one of them, but he's 20.
He's a third-year pro.
Nuge can't have that happen. He cannot have that happen. So that's who Hitchcock should be screaming at right now.
Mm-hmm. That'll be an uncomfortable few minutes in the film room for everybody who's on the ice, except Koskinen.
Yeah, he'll be sitting there and they'll all be patting him on the back and buying him drinks and
kidding.
I owe you one.
Okay. I mean, don't you agree? Like, if they score there and the Oilers lose that game in regulation, it would be a gut punch.
Yeah, because
it's 2 points. I mean, potentially, yeah. But I mean, even if you lose in overtime, you get a point. Well, you know, like that, you know, it's obviously not a desirable result, but the regulation losses are what kill you.
Yeah, because they're 11-13 now. Okay, they're in two. They just got to win two games, Bruce, and they're real 500. Real 500 with Bettman points is going to be awfully close to getting you in the playoffs in the in the Pacific Division. Yeah. So, just two wins, and who are they playing next? It's L.A. As long as they don't let L.A. get away with unmitigated hooking, slashing, cross-checking, holding. Which happens less off. Did you, like, we should talk about this.
Video.
We'll talk about that at the end.
Okay.
The Oilers are within striking distance. They just got to beat a couple teams that are beatable here, and they're real 500 and they're back on track. And they got to get back on track. I'm sick of them losing, Bruce. I can't take it anymore. Yeah. All right. My bad thing is Darnell Nurse puck moving. I don't know. He's been in a funk for 2 or 3 weeks. And tonight he was just holding and holding and holding. There's one play with about 2.5 minutes left or 3 minutes left. About three, because it's Puljujärvi on the ice. And Puljujärvi does a deep curl and he's waiting for the pass. And Nurse just holds it. He holds the puck.
Yeah,
he holds it again. He holds it some more. And he just holds it and holds it. And you just know what's coming next. He's going to make a turnover or he's going to ice it. And he ices it. And we have Oilers have a face-off on their own end. Like, move the puck.
I'm tired, guys. Yeah. No, my better half was exclaiming at that particular moment in time to get the bloody puck and the going north, you know.
Or move your feet.
Yeah, exactly. That's his strength of his game. He's been very tentative this last while.
Yeah, I think he's This is probably a coaching issue where they're trying to get him to change his game and maybe move the puck faster or something. I don't know. Something's going on. He's not looking like he's playing freely. And maybe he needs an adjustment in his game. But that was like, there was all throughout the game, there was all these moments where he could have moved the puck and he just holding it too long. And it's not working.
David, he played 24 minutes tonight and he chipped in on two scoring chances, grade H scoring chances. And his pairing, both him and Russell, none against in big, big minutes. So
yeah, and he made not one mistake on a scoring chance again. So you're right. Like I'm picking on one aspect of his game.
The puck movement was very suspect. It just seemed almost sluggish.
Yeah, that's a good point that you made there, Bruce. Because it's easy to hone in on this one thing about a player mm-hmm. and start to go a little bit crazy because you're looking for it and that's all you see and it's the forest for the trees. Because he didn't make one major mistake on a grade A scoring chance against. That's pretty darn good for a defenseman playing top 4 minutes. So good for you, Darnell Nurse. What is your number, Bruce?
Well, my number is 4. And that is the number of goals that the Oilers have scored in the last 3 games. And I single out those 3 games, a 2-1 overtime loss in Anaheim, a 5-2 with 2 empty net goals loss in Los Angeles, and a 1-0 overtime win in Edmonton. And what grabs my eye is that each of those three opponents was seriously shorthanded of major defensive players. Anaheim used 4 defensemen out of 6 that had fewer than 50 games in the NHL. Los Angeles was missing both of their top 2 goaltenders, Jonathan Quick and Jack Campbell. Peter Budaj was backing up, and they had some unheard-of guy in net. Was it Calvin Peterson? And the Oilers managed to get 2 goals on LA, last-place team's 4th-string goaltender.
But Bruce, they did have Jake the Strangler Muzzin and his two accomplices in crime, referee 1 and referee 2, to shut down the Oilers that game.
Yeah, there's some of that for sure. But still, I mean, they got 2 goals against Calvin Peterson and the 31st place Los Angeles Kings. And then tonight they played against the Dallas Stars, who have 4 starting defensemen on IR and their number 1 goalie, Ben Bishop, on IR. And they get shut out for 60 minutes, and they finally solve them in extra time. And the pop gun offense, I mean, if you can't score goals against 3 teams in a row that are seriously short-staffed on the defense and in between the pipes, or both in the case of Dallas, I'm not sure where you're going to score when you start playing against healthy teams, top of the division teams, and just right now, for whatever reason, the Oilers scoring almost top to bottom of the lineup is just captured in this serious funk. Nobody can seem to score goals.
They're set up, Bruce, to have, if the top line doesn't do it, where's it going to come from? It's not going to come at all. And we know this. We've seen this for, saw it all last year. I want to be patient with the experiment that they're having with Draisaitl and McDavid. But this game, I noticed, aside from the overtime, Draisaitl wasn't moving his feet. He's slowing down and trying to make pretty plays in the neutral zone. It just doesn't. It stops working for a number of reasons with those two guys together. I don't like it. I've never really liked it, and I'd like to see them split up. And I think that their offense will be better off. Like, I think the top line with Chiasson and RNH and McDavid. Certainly worth a try right now. Chiasson is close to scoring often because of the way he's positioning himself. He's like Craig Simpson out there right now. He's parked at the crease. And, have Draisaitl leading a line and see how that goes. I just think they're better off doing that. But we'll see what the coach does. And I'm hoping that I'm wrong. I'm hoping this top line comes to life and scores 2 or 3 goals a game, right? Like everyone's this explosion of goals for McDavid and Draisaitl together at even strength. We never see it. Like it just maybe once we see it, and then there's 5-6 games where we don't, and the other lines can't get anything going. So I just that's my anyway. What do you think?
Tonight, Draisaitl was more in pass mode, but he chipped in on 5 even strength scoring chances more than any other Oiler.
He did.
And he, I thought, I agreed with your take that he really wasn't moving his feet all that much, and it was a little bit sluggish for a good chunk of the game. And then the third period, he really came on. Like he made two or three big defensive plays, using that big paddle of his to break up a couple of dangerous looking rushes or clear the zone. And then, of course, in overtime, he made a beautiful pass to set McDavid in alone for the goal that wasn't. And then he made another perfect, like a great rush where he just blew past number 16, Jason Dickinson. Boy, talk about being overmatched. Jason Dickinson on the ice in overtime against the Big Three. And Drysdale made short work of him. And then, of course, another perfect feed over to Oscar for the finish. So Leon wound up being a big man for the Oilers tonight, David.
He did it. Two of his grade A contributions to grade A chances came in 3-on-3 play, where he's absolutely dominant.
He is.
Usually,
did you see the graphic that they showed in overtime? Overtime points since the beginning of 2016-17,
no.
and with plus one tonight. Now Drysdale and McDavid are tied for the top 13 overtime points since the beginning of two seasons and a bit ago. 13 games the Oilers have won. Actually, probably 14 or 15, because occasionally they're not both in on the same goal, that the Oilers have won, thanks to those two guys, usually working in tandem with one another. And no other player in the NHL has more than 11.
Bruce, would you keep them together at even strength? Yes or no?
I see the rationale of switching them up every so often, and right now it's an on again, off again kind of alternating current. Right now they're lined up and they're trying to do the news separately, but that'll switch back again, I would imagine. But for Ken Hitchcock, he's trying to find some stability, and one thing he's done constantly is stuck with the Brodziak, Vucic, Cassian line. They've never changed any of the games that he's coached, four games now. And he's fiddled around with the other lines, but he's always kept McDavid and Drysdale together, and he's put different guys on the wing. And tonight he switched Drysdale to left wing, which he doesn't normally play. But that's been, and then the rest is a whole bunch of mix and match. Like tonight he put in all three guys that were in the press box on Sunday, got into the lineup tonight. The other goalie got in. He made a number of moves on the roster tonight, and ultimately, when you get the 2 points, you have to say that they worked out.
So was that a yes or a no?
I believe him for now. Now I'm biased, David. I have both McDavid and Drysdale in my keeper league, so when they're together, they both tend to score more. So I like this. So that's
I'm
my.
not sure McDavid tends to score more, like
Oh yeah.
honestly. Like I don't think that's backed up by the numbers.
Okay, I'll find you some numbers.
All right. Didn't last year his goals for percentage go down when he was with Drysdale? Pretty sure that's the case, Bruce. Now that's goals for and against, so we'll see.
Right.
Okay, my number, Bruce, is zero. Shout out. Shout
Yeah,
out.
yeah.
That's the number I like.
Yeah.
We don't
Zero.
hardly ever see that number for the Oilers, and Koskinen has just been fantastic. And you know what? There was just such an avalanche of criticism of Peter Chiarelli
Yeah.
over that Koskinen signing. And, I didn't know what to make of it at the time, other than the fact that I think I could find a blog post where I said the number one need for the Oilers in the offseason is to get a goalie who can challenge Cam Talbot for the number one job. Because you can't count on Talbot, and he needs relief, and you need someone to challenge this guy. And I saw it as the number one need. So I thought it's okay to lavish a fairly big contract on that player. And
Just got
no movement clause was a non-issue. Like I just thought,
a 1 year deal, it's nothing.
it's nothing. But there was a ton of criticism of Chiarelli. And listen,
Well,
most Oilers fans want to see him fired, and there's justification for that. But Chiarelli has made some good moves. And
it
this
doesn't
Koskinen
mean
move.
that every single move he makes is a horrible mistake, but that's sort of the starting position that sometimes you get it. Well, Chiarelli made this deal. There must be something wrong with this guy, and let's pick that apart. And Ryan Strome, we all hated the whole time he was here. All of a sudden, why would we give up Ryan Strome to get in another player? Like there's a lot of sort of circular reasoning that goes on, and he does get some things right. And that, what I said at the time of the Koskinen signing, you can check out our old blog or our old podcast. And of course, there was a lot of concern that they paid $2.5 million for Koskinen, and Colorado got this Francouz guy for $690,000. That was basically tied with Koskinen's stats. Well, guess what? Francouz is in the minors right now. He's not helping Colorado at all. And Koskinen is, you know, if he's not saving the Oilers' season, he's certainly keeping them competitive. And he's, you know, 6-2-1. His save percentage after tonight's probably back up over .920. And what I said at the time was, the contract was rich, but they, you know, the overall goaltending budget is reasonable. It's under $7 million. It's under 10% of the salary cap. And what I said was about Koskinen, you know, they just have to get one right. They have to get this one right. If they got the right guy, it's going to be worth the money. And so far, it's looking like it was a good bet.
Yeah, he's looking like the modern version of Ken Dryden. He needs to just rest on his stick between in station breaks. have the two gloves up on the stick and rest on his stick, because he plays. He's got those big Ken Dryden pads.
Like this, say, David, with the goalie stick leaning on it forward. And of course, Koskinen, he's really a tall version of Ken Dryden, who was only 6'4", but the biggest, pretty much the biggest player in the league at the time. And you can say close to the same about 6'7" Mikko Koskinen today, just a giant of a man.
So let's just leave with a quick take. So who was it? Let me just get the name of the fella who put together that video. Mm-hmm. Someone put, one of the guys on Twitter, Oiler fan on Twitter, put together a video of McDavid in the LA game. And he zeroed in on 12 incidents of McDavid getting hooked, slashed. And that was at GovNiash did this work. Stick in the face. And Bruce, so I watched it, and about, you could say probably about half of the 12 aren't penalties.
Yeah, they were. There was some pretty borderline stuff in there. I mean, the point was McDavid had to fight through something.
But about half of them could have been, and about three of them were penalties. And so a couple people just said to me, well, there was just two or three there. And I'm saying,
How many power plays were generated from that? Zero.
Seriously, just two or three? That's your argument? That is your position? That is a very weak position, because two or three obvious penalties that weren't called. I mean, come on. That was pathetic. That was pathetic. And I don't want to, like, I'm tempted to make other kind of, you know, questioning the referees, like, what's going on? But just, it was incompetent refereeing. Let's just leave it at that. It was utterly, utterly incompetent refereeing. And those two referees should be ashamed of their work that night.
Yeah, I don't want to get into conspiracy theories. I'm just going to cast aside the 10 years of evidence of all Canadian teams getting screwed anytime they go to California. It's just me being silly. But what I will say is, of all those things, the most outrageous thing by far of any of the penalties they didn't call was the one they did call on McDavid with 1:46 to go in a one-goal lead with his team trailing. And he's the guy that's maybe going to keep him in the game. And they send him to the penalty box when a guy grabbed him by the arm and he just pushed back. And they called him for interference or elbowing. The end zone replay that's at the end of that video package you posted today shows that if there is any penalty there at all, it's definitely on the LA guy. And McDavid's just defending in his space. And after all the stuff they turned a blind eye to all game long, they called that basically decided the hockey game. And I remain incensed when the refs start deciding hockey games with garbage calls. You know, I don't care where the game is. I don't care who the teams are. Stay out of it, right? If it's sort of a 50-50 play, don't call anything. Don't make stuff up.
Yeah, it was just terrible work.
Yeah, outrageous.
All right, let's leave it there before we both start swearing. All right, Bruce.
And then the Dustin Brown high stick that got rescinded. Now, that's what's another matter. But anyway,
how the hell did that happen?
Well, he's a good guy, Dustin Brown, apparently. Anyway.
What would Dustin think?
Exactly.
All right. That's a reference to the Corey Perry.
Certainly is. Another
screening of smashing into our goalie in the playoffs. All right. Thanks, Bruce. Thanks for talking tonight.
Yeah, thanks for listening, everyone. At least we got a win to talk about, even tight as it was. The Oilers came out on top, and all was saved.
And in the meantime, and in between times, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.